Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast by and for the bisexual community. This month's topic is the use of social media to inform, educate, and build our community. With us, we have our bisexual Batman, Harry Farrell. Harry is an author, life coach, and bisexual and Twitter warrior. Welcome, Harry.
Hi, how's everybody?
Hi.
Wonderful.
I'm John.
I'm Ruth.
I'm Lynette. And that's Harry.
I'm Harry, sorry.
That's okay. All right, Harry, just to recap, we just did an interview with you very recently, and we had a chance to talk about your life and your work and your fantastic book. Just in case anybody might have missed that, can you just give us kind of a recap?
Well, yes, I just got the print version of my novel, Love, Sex, and Understanding the Universe, available on Amazon, and I'm writing another novel which has bisexual characters, and I'm an activist, bisexual activist, and a blogger. I write a blog on Blogger, and I write a column for a regional LGBT newspaper in the Midwest called The Gaily, and it's about bisexuality, my column, and I'm a life coach for bisexuals at Navigating the Byway.
It's fantastic. I just had a chance to read that. I think your first article that you put out, you said that you have some kind of contractual thing that you have to wait till they publish till you can actually publish it, right?
I have to wait till they publish the next issue before I can publish the previous issues.
Yes, I've been reading it too. I'm a month behind because I'm reading it from your blog.
Right. That's only, unless you get the paper itself, it's hard to do it otherwise.
That's how I'm doing it too. We'll provide, as like I always say, we'll provide all the links to those things on our link, our file on the website. All right, so let's get started.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to do a history of digital activism and before the internet. I guess I'll start. I've been an activist for a lot of years, since I was a teenager, really, in different movements. Before the internet, we had leafleting. In D.C., typically we would print thousands of leaflets, send people to metro stations, and leaflet at rush hour. That would be one way to get a message out. Another way would be to do phone trees, which meant that 10 people called 10 people, and those 10 people called 10 people, and so on and so on and so on. It was a very manual kind of process. The other thing that still gets done in nonprofits is mailings, fundraising mailings and newsletters and those kind of things. But back in the day, that was a really crucial way to communicate with your base. Within the bi community here, we had weekly dinners in DuPont Circle. And the way that we promoted them was that we always had an ad in the Washington Blade. We always had an ad in the city paper, and we, as the beginnings of social media, things like Usenet started appearing, we started posting in LGBT and bi-friendly conferences to get our message out. After the internet started being more a common thing, and still talking about the days in which people were using modem lines and a lot of text-based stuff and very primitive websites, we started building those primitive websites. We used things like Yahoo groups, Yahoo mailing list, other kinds of, Usenet or Usenet too. We had listserv mailing lists, the kinds of mailing lists that were really hard to maintain and manage, and people would join up to get our message out. I was looking at some old Yahoo group stuff from way back in the 90s and realizing that our local groups were really posting a lot in the bi Yahoo groups, even back then. So we're going back close to 20 years now that we've been using electronic media for getting messages out and trying to organize communities.
I haven't been very familiar with anything that goes on in the bisexual activism and the internet until recently, of course. But I was wondering, was IRC used quite a bit, or?
Not a lot. There were people that were doing relay chats, but that wasn't a big part. I will say that there were also Yahoo groups that were for, at least from my experience, bi men who were in the closet, very deeply in the closet. And we used to go to those groups and promote our events and things going on so that they would know that there's actually a community out there. And a lot of these men didn't really know there was a community. There was a site that I used to go to a lot that was a website for bi closeted men, which I tried to help on. It's funny that if you brought up the history, it would say sports talk. So it was a very closeted place, and lots of mental health needs there. I did the best I could as a peer support person, but you know, after years of doing that, you get burned out on it because many of these people don't have access to the kind of health needs that they should be able to access. Some would be able to get help. Some would come out to their partners, and then, you know, the typical thing would be that they would be in divorce court very soon.
Yes.
It's another big problem with mixed orientation marriages, I think, on both sides is, you know, both same sex and opposite sex mixed orientation marriages in which disclosure of bisexuality is a really difficult thing, and it really needs a whole lot of resources to salvage that relationship, and it's really hard to find them.
Yeah, and they are salvageable if those tools were readily available to these relationships. I wouldn't say just marriages. They are very salvageable with the right kind of therapy and tools. And that's unfortunate these things happen because it's...
Well, there aren't qualified people out there, and not enough. And they end up finding the wrong people who, you know, they find... people are telling the man, well, you're gay. And yeah, so that's a huge problem. They go to the, you know, people don't understand, don't have any background. I don't think there's a whole lot, like when I, you know, went to college, my minor was human sexual studies, you know, and there just isn't a lot, even still, I believe, about bisexuality when you study, even if you go in the field, not just psychology, but if you even go directly into human sexual studies or human sexuality, minors or majors, I don't think there's still a whole lot about bisexuality, and largely because there hasn't even been that much research except for, you know, trying to determine if we really exist. So,
exactly. That's what, you know, I hear over and over is there's no training that happens, you know, except for the fact that from what I hear, many therapists are trained to try to cure it, or, you know, they view that as a problem, and instead of, you know, being accepting of that someone is gay or lesbian, they say they're bisexual, that, well, here, let me help you figure that out because you're confused.
Right.
And rather than even go on and deal with the real problems, you know, they don't get the help they need.
Well, that's why I started, you know, the life coaching, because I realized that even though, you know, I don't have, like, serious training in bisexuality from a academic point of view, it's because it doesn't even exist, really, barely, you know, and now maybe it does a little bit, but I realize I know as much as anybody does, I mean, or more than most people, because I have been all my life paying attention to bisexual issues. I'm a bisexual. I've talked to everybody, and anytime I've had any inkling that anyone might be bisexual, I've tried to strike up a conversation, and I've always paid attention, and I'm old, so I've been around it for a long time and known a lot of people. And then I do have that, you know, I do have the psychology background, the human sexual studies background. I've read, you know, everything I could get my hands on. But going back to, you know, reaching out to the community and stuff in the past before the internet, I just want to say when I lived in San Francisco in the 1980s, there was, and I guess they're still around, the Bi Center was active back then. And I think I'm trying to remember how I knew about it. And I think they must have had ads in LGBT newspapers. There were 3 weekly newspapers, a couple of different ones that were always like, you know, on Hate Street or in the Castro district, you'd find them in random places, quite easy to find them, Bay Area Reporter, and I think there was another one or two. So they must have had ads in there or something. I don't know how I knew the Bi Center existed, but they were getting the information out there somehow. And then in the mm-hmm. early days of the internet, I think one of the biggest problem was, you know, things were so, you know, wild, wild west that, you know, if you typed in the word bisexual, you got porn. And it was really hard. You know, I remember searching you know, mm-hmm. at the library because I had dial-up at my house. So I was at the library, and I wanted to see what was out there. And this was probably mid to late 90s. And all this porn just pops up. You know, it used to just come right up. It wouldn't say you have to be this age or anything. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was really difficult for people to find anything. And that's, I guess, the root of the Google, you know, ban on not doing the autocomplete, but, you know, they need to really change that. But it did it came from somewhere. Yeah.
Well, thanks to people that have been working very hard, like Tara Avery and several other people, they've actually gotten it to the point where you can get semi-information off of Google. It's not completely lifted yet or figured out yet, as far as I know, but now when you punch in bisexual, you actually get some listings of groups, right? Actually, we're even on there.
Right.
So that's very helpful, because when I went looking last year, I got virtually nothing but, you know, images of bisexual porn thing, whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, this is so disheartening. I mean, it took me forever to find my local Q Center, which probably would have been easier if I'd asked my sister who's. but, you know, I didn't, because I was out there looking for bisexuals, and it took a long time to find the Q Center. And then even on that site, and I'm not slamming the Q Center, it was difficult to find the bisexual group. And I think it was just the way the site is designed, and not anything against the Q Center. But anyway, it was a workout.
Yeah, I would also like to give a shout out to Sarah Prager, who runs Quist, which is a smartphone LGBT history application.
Mm-hmm.
And if people haven't downloaded it, it's free with ads and $5 ad free. It's a great, great LGBT history of the day, and it's very inclusive. She's a lesbian, but she has a bisexual partner, so she's very bi-friendly, and there's lots of bisexual history within that application.
Yeah, she was influential in getting the Google thing.
It was really her campaign this time, I will say.
Yay, Sarah.
We all kind of joined it after she decided to do it.
She did
a similar one really for Apple on the Apple Store, whatever it's called, because it was banning her application and it was banning any LGBT stuff. And so it was even more homophobic than what Google has been doing to us.
That's absolutely true, because I remember a year ago going to look for things about bisexuality on iTunes, and there was nothing. I found one UK podcast that had to kind of circumvent the whole bisexual thing, you know. But if you don't know the lingo, you know, then you're not going to know. Somebody says purple unicorn, what they're talking about, you know, you know, and you're not going to, it was just by luck I found that. And it's better now because we're actually on there. And if it's still, we're not, you have to, you know, put in bicast before we'll come up, you know, but, you know, at least you can find us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was going to go back to, now we've kind of covered this, Yahoo bisexual group in the 90s and through the 2000s until things like Facebook started coming up. That was really a lifeline for me. The local DC bisexual community kind of fell apart. There were attempts to reorganize it. There was always a strong women's group, but for really a strong community, for me, it didn't exist for years. And Binet USA, especially the Usenet or the Yahoo group, was really a lifeline. It was activist alerts. It was talking about issues that bisexuals were facing. There was a lot of conversation, like lots of huge email threads that people would respond and counter-respond and have good conversations. Mm-hmm. And it really, and so, you know, I look at social media a little differently. I look at it going all the way back to the beginnings of the internet with things like Usenet and those kind of conferences and even IRCs and such. But it was kind of our social network until Facebook happened. And when Facebook mm-hmm. happened, a lot of that just moved over. The other thing that was pretty important to me, like I guess mid-2000s, that was the Buy Books group. We were doing reviews of Buy Books in order to see which ones were acceptable to put up for Lamy Awards when the bisexual categories came into the Lamys. And mm-hmm. that was really, you know, first, it exposed us all to bisexual books that were out there that weren't getting much play, and we wouldn't know about them unless we were on that group. Second, it made me read. You know, it made me read bisexual books so that I could review them or have a Yahoo group kind of discussion about certain books. And that was very useful. And until things like Facebook happened, those were the ways that we all communicated. I will remember, I think it was 2007, when the Inclusive ENDA national bill was being made exclusive by the HRC and Barney Frank. And it was a huge activist alert to get active, to call your congresspeople to put stuff out on the internet, to respond to those who were pushing the exclusive law, et cetera, et cetera. And those were the ways that we really connected and made work happen in those days. And now we have things like Facebook, where within a half hour, we all know the bad article that came out or the comments on an article that we have to go to. So it's really right. changed.
Yeah, so it's, instead of having that delay where it's already the moment is already gone way back, you know, we can get that information out and respond and actually, you know, combat some of this as it happens. And that's a big stride there. That's an important one.
That's really kind of recent too, and it's been really beautiful to watch it happen where we'll all go, you know, and Binet USA is my favorite place because it just seems like it has a huge readership, and the administrators seem to, you know, I like the way they run the page, and so we'll all go on there and we'll go, oh, look at this, and everybody responds, and then, you know, next thing you know, there's just like this huge, like, you know, it's the tanks moving in, and it's really, and we're working together, and I've just loved seeing that happen, and I think it's making a huge difference, really.
I think it's making a great, big, giant difference. I do want to caution the audience, please read the articles, but if you are not prepared to hear a lot of really horrible things, you know, avoid the comments. Unless, like I said, you're prepared to put in or respond or reply in a positive, constructive way. There are a group of people, and some of them, it's, you know, some of them, they just do that on any article, and it doesn't matter if it's even bisexual, you know, and there, you know, there's four or five or six of them that just say the worst things you could possibly imagine. And then there's other people that just do it randomly who think that they need to do that. My opinion about that whole thing is, you know, if you can't say something nice about a bisexual, please don't say anything at all.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, for all those people who go, oh, there's no such thing as biphobia, you know, if you think that, then read the comments.
Well, that's one of the things I love about it, because it's just this blatant proof that there is. And I mention that a lot. I say, you know, thanks for doing this, because, you know, here's our proof right here. You know, you were a big help to us. And I don't think that really...
Yeah, I see now what I call bad, which is the, you know, bisexuals against defamation, which is kind of mm-hmm. like the bisexual glad. It's kind of a guerrilla force that goes out there to the internet and corrects mistakes and corrects biphobia. We do it sometimes just by commenting on articles. We do it by writing letters to an editor on a bad mm-hmm. article. We do
email.
It in the We do it in the Twitter space when there's someone tweets something that is clearly biphobic. We go in and we talk to that person and make a change. I saw just a few weeks ago, there was a really bad WordPress, I think, article that was trying to gay-splain, I guess you would say, why gay people have problems with bisexuals, and include a lot of just very stereotypical stuff about us. And by the close of the day, activists had talked to him on Twitter, had responded in comments, and it made him really understand that he had done something wrong, and he apologized to us.
Yeah, I think I'm the one who probably brought that to everybody's attention. I ran into it, I think, on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I saw it, and it was one of those days where it was just like, one of the things I love about how we're doing this in mass is, like, we've been talking about how everybody gets burnt out on all this, because there's so much negativity and so many problems and so many issues and so much ugliness that we face. So it was like one of these days where I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to deal with this.
Yeah.
And I put it out there. And the next thing I knew, everybody was on it, and it made it easier for me then to jump in, because it's just like trying to tackle that. You know, there's a lot of stuff I see all the time, and I don't always, but it was like, it was really ugly, and it needed, and you know, and then you get all these other people in on it and responding, and then it was easier for me to then pull up my strength together to deal with it too. And yeah, and that guy, yeah, he was apologizing, and I think he added some information. He didn't go quite as far as we might have liked him to, but yeah. And so because of that, all these people who might have been reading his blog and agreeing with him and seeing that, I mean, that's one of the main things that I'm all about, is stopping the biophobia, because people will just keep spreading it. It just goes like, people repeat what they hear, and as long mm-hmm. as nobody's saying, you know what, this isn't okay, then it keeps going on. And that's what happened when I got on Twitter, and I was seeing all these just random biphobic remarks, and nobody was saying anything. And there was a couple of people on there, and I just started like responding to stuff, because I wanted, you know, if somebody is saying something biphobic and they have all these followers who are reading it, some of those people are bisexuals, and some of those people are going to repeat it to their bisexual followers or to their family or their friends at school. And if somebody comes on and says, wait, stop, don't, you know, people say, well, you're just dealing with one person. No, I'm not. You know, I'm dealing with everybody that's seeing that, and then maybe is going to repeat it. Or, you know, as people say, what do you care that I'm saying this? I'm like, it's not a, and they go, why do you take it so personally? I said, it's not about me. It's about your followers and who else
exactly.
is seeing it. And people aren't going to stand up and say, well, I'm bi. Maybe they're closeted. They can't, you know, and they're hearing you say this.
Exactly. That's exactly it. When we respond to comments, when we address any, it's not because we think we're going to change any of these people's minds who say these horrible things. It's because somebody else is reading that who needs us to say, hey, no, don't do that.
Well, and,
you know,
and
I don't even care if anybody likes bisexuals. I just want them to know, you don't get to talk that way about us anymore.
Right. And I don't agree that we don't change people's minds, because there are a lot of people whose minds are not going to be changed, but there's a lot of people who are really just repeating stuff they've heard and haven't really thought about it. And I've had people engage with me quite a bit. They'll get into a whole debate with me. And some of them have actually been a lot of fun. And in the end, I'm getting them sending me things saying respect, and they start following me, you know, so they're, because they're just saying something they heard, you know, as long as you don't, confront that or question it, they just keep going with it. So, we do change people's minds.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess who I mean is, because you were talking about that young person who really, that was the case, and he actually, you know, started his journey of education about bisexuality because of what happened a couple of weeks ago with us all responding to him. But there are people who just, what is the word I want to use, John, but I probably won't.
Well, I think there's ignorance, and you know, ignorance is cured by information, and
mm-hmm.
I always find that you have to go to where people are, and one of the things that I always do with especially gay men is tell them, hey, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I was exactly where you are. I just happened to be bisexual, but I got, you know, I got beat up. I got called the F word, the Q word, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's just that until we go to where people are, we're not going to be able to educate people, right? And I think that sometimes we use the word biphobia a little too much, because that's a fighting word. It can be a fighting word, and it can make people put up their defenses. And that sometimes we need to use other words to describe biphobia so that people can hear it and begin to be educated.
I like to use the word bigotry a lot and ignorance, but I do use the word biphobia a lot because I want to bring it to people's attention. They think, oh, this is harmless. You know, it's okay to say that there's no such thing as a bisexual man. That doesn't make me biphobic. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, it does. But a lot of it, again, sometimes it's because they don't want there to be bisexual men. You know, when it comes down to it,
mm-hmm.
it's not that they don't really think they exist. They just don't want to, you know, want them to be there. But
well, I think that's another group of people. I think that there's we're pretty inside our local LGBT center in D.C. And one of the things that we do is we support the other programs. We're there when people are doing fundraisers, when people are asking for help, which helps a lot, right? That we're there on the ground in their work, and we ask for support for our work, the mutual kind of thing. But I find just a lot of ignorance. And if you talk to people on that level of, you know, not accusing them of being biphobic, but just explaining more like how we see life and how our issues with the gay community come from, you know, stories, as opposed to, you know, just using the word biphobia and trying to, and thinking that they're going to understand biphobia by using the word biphobia instead of like telling them stories about biphobia at work without
right.
using
Yeah, the word mm-hmm. has to be followed up with information, but the word also sometimes shocks people, I think, into understanding, oh my God, am I really that bad? Am I saying something that's that horrible? Because mm-hmm. you're accusing them of doing, you know, and they are doing it, but then if you don't follow it up with information, maybe they'll go out and get themselves educated or think about it. But, I definitely believe that you've got to, help them understand why you're saying that word and why they're saying is not okay, and how it is affecting people in negative ways.
Yeah. Let me bring up another one. Bi erasure, which is another word that we use that sometimes isn't well understood. This is another case for the insurgence of bad. It was the Winter Olympics, and a bisexual skater won a gold medal. I was at a Olympics watch party / potluck on the back porch, checking my Facebook and mail and such, and found that already this is like within 15 minutes after the medal was awarded and articles started appearing all over the international press that she was misidentified as lesbian. Within an hour, the activists made the changes to properly identify her. And she's not really, you know, she's not an activist. She's an athlete. She's a skater. She's currently got a male partner, but she's openly bisexual. And it was kind of amazing to see our activism at work in real time in such a short period, changing mm-hmm. the international media to properly identify a bisexual woman when the early articles mislabeled her. And that's by erasure at work, and that's another piece that we're always trying to work on.
Well, that same thing happened with Tom Daley, too, is that we got up and said, no, he's not gay. He clearly said, I am bisexual. I mean, not Tom. I'm talking about the boy from here, from Oregon.
The football player, the high school football player. What's his name? Will or something?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Daley's a English.
Non-label.
He's a non-label.
Yeah. So, but I'm talking about our football player from our university here who said, I am bisexual, and he sticks to that clearly. He's actually even mentored someone else with that.
Yeah, I actually talk about him in my last Daily article. I talk about all the great bisexual guys who've come out and the bravery of them. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the ones I mentioned because I'm trying to find his name as we speak. But.
Yeah, that would be great because I wish I had brought that up. But
well, and we also have another case of the girl in Pittsburgh who's identified as pansexual with a trans male partner who was from a religious family and was cut off and has a GoFundMe campaign. The first articles I saw identified her as gay.
Yeah, she was identified as a lesbian.
Well, I just saw that the more recent articles, including an article in The Advocate yesterday, identified her as pansexual because she did identify as pansexual.
Right. Oh, his name is Connor Martin.
Yes.
University. Yeah.
Brave, brave boy.
Yeah. I mean, I've been so impressed by. The article I talk about is the Jamaican dance hall guy who came out as bisexual, which is just unbelievable. And then Connor Martins and Trey Melvin and then the school board member who I've written an article for Bynet, but it hasn't been put out yet. But anyway.
these people were, a lot of them were, you know, mislabeled and we got it right away. And, you know, had our voices heard, and it was, you know, they changed this.
The Huff Post labeled her a lesbian as well, and some of the people that commented were very upset that, like, pansexual was even being listed. Some of them were saying, we already have, like, a queer community, why do we need more letters? And so that was a bit, like, panphobic right there.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, this might be a good time for me to mention when we were talking about different social media. And one of the things that I don't think is utilized quite as much is LinkedIn. Because there's an LGBT group discussion board on LinkedIn. And I've started putting stuff on there and commenting on things on there. And that was one of the things that came up recently was the alphabet soup. And adding more and why, and, you know, so many people are like, oh, LGBT is enough and that's fine. And I agree that, you know, it gets so big that it's out of hand. But I said, it's not okay to say, well, everybody's represented in there. I mean, the B is in there, but people who are, intersex or people who are, pansexual are thinking they're not included and we're not, it's not, you know, okay for those of us that are included to say, well, we don't need any more. But no, I don't know what the answer is, but it's been really good to get on LinkedIn and get involved in these LGBT discussions. And I keep bringing up the bisexual issue. One time someone posted an article about how gays and lesbians are not, you know, what percentage of gays and lesbians are out at work and which ones aren't. And I looked at the article, and the article didn't say gays and lesbians. It said LGBT people. So I said, you know, please, when you're saying this stuff, say LGBT, because it's also talking about bisexuals, and bisexuals are more closeted. And I just keep throwing that in there everywhere I go, you know. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this discussion about the ever-increasing label multiple times, and when we and trans people were started to be put at the end of LGBT. When it used to be GL, and then it was GLB, and then it was GLBT, and then it became LGBT, and then it became Q squared A squared with everything on it. And this is going back to, you know, the 90s, early 2000s. And at that point, we were starting to use the term queer as an inclusive term. And, you know, these things, these labels go back and forth. You know, lots of us used the term queer in the early part of the 21st century. And that term started becoming more just for gays and lesbians who were more radical, right? Mm-hmm. And so it became difficult for us to say, oh, we're queer, which meant we were just like more the existentialist part of the LG community. And then we just had to explain that we were bisexual also. But it's, you know, terms come and go, and we just have to always be there where they're at. I think that sometimes we get a little too fixated on the pansexual term because we have a long history as bisexuals, and we tend to feel that younger people who label themselves pansexual don't really have an understanding of like all that we've done in the past to give them the space to be pansexual. And so it kind of becomes a little generational war.
Well, yeah,
I want to say my piece on this. I don't necessarily think that they're not listening to history. I think it is something that, you know, because of, you know, terms are all individual, and people, you know, they grasp onto one word or they grasp onto another. I don't necessarily think that choosing a different label besides bisexuality that is within the non-monosexual community and the non-monosexual family is necessarily ignoring the bisexual history or ignoring the all-inclusive definition of bisexuality. I think it is more about a person is individually choosing a term that in their mind fits them more than another term. And I think that's all that it is. There isn't necessarily anything, there isn't anything that is disassociating themselves with the bisexual history. So that's mainly my point, is it's not necessarily a generational thing, although it could be. I think it is just more attaching to one word versus another word.
I think the issue I have with that, and I don't have any issue with the pansexual label, is the fact that there is a trend that they are being told that in order to interpret their identity, they have to change the bisexual one. And that means, what I mean by that is they're being told, well, you're really pansexual because you're non-binary, and bisexual is a binary, so you're not bisexual. And unbeknownst to them, they grab this, and this is, hey, this is what I really am. This explains me as a personal label, and they offend a lot of people, and not meaning to. They don't mean to, and they really don't know where all that's coming from,
right.
And I've said this before.
Well, we talked about, you know, Tumblr, and what I do know about Tumblr is, you know, what I do on Tumblr is I search the word bisexual. And what I see is I'm not looking at, you know, all the bisexual Tumblr pages. I'm looking at individuals who are posting stuff about bisexuality, whether they're talking about themselves or whatever. And we're talking about some very, very, very young people who don't know much about anything in the world yet. You know, they're learning everything, right? They're coming into their mm-hmm. early teens. And sometimes it's even younger, but it's a lot of young teens. And so they are somewhat ignorant about the history just because they're ignorant about everything. They're just coming into the world and they're hearing what other people are saying around them, their friends. It's just like schoolyard, you know, learning about birds and the bees from, and so what the information that is going around a lot does seem to be, there's a lot of confusion. I mean, I see constantly people asking, what is the difference? I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I see it on Twitter too. And so there is, a lot of misinformation about it. And there are people who are trying to say, yes, you know, people constantly saying, you know, bisexual is binary and transphobic. And so it's a mixed situation with pansexuality. But a lot of people just feel very strongly that it specifically says, I don't see gender. And to me, that's where it's most legitimate because that's where it really is mm-hmm. most, like a lot of bisexuals will say that too, that they're, when you say you're pansexual, you're explicitly saying, I don't see gender, gender's not an issue for me. And for some bisexuals it is and for some it isn't. But, often it's used in a lot of other ways. And I think the real problem with it is it came about largely because people were, bisexual is such a word associated with porn. It was associated with such negativity. There were so many negative stereotypes around it that people simply don't want to use that word to describe themselves. It's like, you know, using it became a bad, ugly word. And so people wanted another thing to call themselves. And that's where the problem is, because then it makes people not think that bisexual is bad.
I don't think all pansexuals, though, think that, any non-monosexual family.
I think that's where it kind of started from was people wanting to disassociate from the word bisexual and disassociate from the root bi, because it does sound as if it's binary. But no, I know a lot of pansexuals aren't doing it for that reason, but I think that's kind of why it even came about.
I want to, like, disagree slightly with that, too. I thought that when I first, especially when I first came out as bisexual, I thought that any label besides bisexuality was basically creating, like, a biphobic atmosphere, and it's actually really not. I mean, it's really just about these groups of people really identifying with another monosexual label, and it really... It really broadens your mind when you hear just people who say, like, you know, I did identify as bisexual and I wasn't feeling that bisexuality was inclusive. And then they realize that, well, you know, I started learning these other non-monosexual terms and found that this word really spoke to me more than bisexual ever, more than bisexuality ever did. And so I think a lot of the people that have either chosen a specific word that isn't bisexuality or have gone from a bisexual term to another one, I don't think there's this this negative view on bisexuality or this this word was associated negatively, so I have to keep away from it. I know that it's not the case for everybody. I know some people really do get away from the term bisexuality because of all the negativity that surrounds it. But I do.
Right. I think we're saying basically the same thing, that there's both, you know, there's both situations going on there, and some of it's problematic and some of it isn't. And some of, you know, and I try not to promote the word pansexual or use it a lot, but I'm always supportive of the mm-hmm. identity, and I always include it when I'm talking to bisexuals. I'm always intend also to be talking to any non-monosexual person. Because, yeah, I think I do respect it, and I think I always feel very strongly that you have to respect whatever someone labels themselves as, no matter, you can look at their behavior and go, to me, or their, even the things they're saying, and say, well, you know, you don't sound gay to me, you sound bi, but if they're telling me they're gay, I'm going to respect that. You know, I'm not going to tell them you don't sound gay. I'm just going to go, okay, well, you know, that's how you're identifying yourself, and I have to respect that, and that, you know, and I do respect.
I just want to say what I would encourage everyone trying to figure out who they are and what they are, before you make a decision about what bisexuality is, to be informed about it, what it truly is. And what I mean by that is not by what it says in the medical book, and not particularly by the LGBT community sites, but go into Binet USA, go to the Bisexual Resource Center, talk to bisexuals who are informed about what the word or I label bisexuality means before you make decisions. And please, if you feel that you're more, that you personally identify as pansexual, that's great. I mean, it really is. That's fantastic. But try to be aware of the political implications of separating from what I feel is our community. And there are that we have to present a united front, and I'm not just talking about pansexuals, I mean omnisexuals, multisexuals, all of you. We're all in that same group, and we need to pull together and be together. And so I would actually probably identify as pansexual because my attraction is pretty much widespread. But bisexual is the word I had to fight, and I've said this a million times, and that's the word I'm fighting to get people to talk right about. And also, I do it as a political show of support and solidarity with my community. So that's why I do it. And I don't want you all to think y'all have to run out and be radicals and do whatever, but just try to be aware of what your impact is on the community, because you do have one. You may not feel you do, but you do. And that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, I think it also is that we have, in my local group, a lot of us would also identify as pansexual. We always talk about it. And, you know, we, lots of us say, yeah, we really, like, are attracted to people and, you know, and mm-hmm. it's really about the person. And that's kind of where we all are. But I tell pansexuals coming into our group that, you know, it's great. Lots of us identify as pansexual as well as bisexual, but mm-hmm. we have a bisexual group and we have a bisexual community, and you're welcome here. And there isn't a pansexual community in DC to go to. So, you know, if you want to be with people who are the non-monosexual, the middle sexual people, you have to come here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there's lots of different groups, especially on Facebook, you know, that you can join for your own personal identity. And then we have the big group, you know, which is, you know, like Binet USA and those groups where you can, you know, be a more cohesive community altogether. So you can address your personal identity label and address, you know, your solidarity with the community at large. And you can do both. But you really, really can. So we took a lot longer than usual, as we always do, and the topic was very involved. So we broke this up into two parts for you, and we will try to stay better on topic as we go along this time. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
Blah, blah, blah.